Hey, listeners. If you love the Hashtag Am Writing podcast, you'll love the Hashtag Am Writing emails. So sign up. You get show notes and links, sure, but that's not all. You'll get invites to ride-alongs along with bonus episodes and thoughts on revision, TikTok, and more, plus access to commenting and chatting on Substack. And we will never, ever share our list with anyone else, because we wouldn't, and because that sounds like way too much work, and we're mostly in this for the hang. So pop your name on our list at amwritingpodcast.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay.
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. Try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3.
Hey, I'm KJ Delantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, pitches, proposals, fiction, nonfiction. This is the podcast about sitting down and getting your work done. And I am one of your hosts, but this week your only host, KJ Delantonia, the author of the novels, The Chicken Sisters and In Her Boots, the forthcoming novel, Playing the Witch Card, which I'm super excited about, and the nonfiction book, How to Be a Happier Parent, as well as a former parenting columnist and editor at the New York Times. And joining me today, yes, I'm so excited. This is going to be a fantastic episode, and you're really going to love it. Joining me today is Rachel Kramer Bussell, and she is the author of How to Write Erotica, as well as a variety of other things, some of which, at least, you won't be surprised to hear, are erotica, because it really been hard to write a book called How to Write Erotica without some chops in that area. So, Rachel's here. We're going to talk how to write erotica. We're going to talk about how to write. What's really exciting me about this topic, besides just the idea of writing sex scenes and writing sort of specifically sensory things, which is what this book is wonderful for. I'm also really excited just to talk about writing things, scenes that make you uncomfortable, because I think this idea of writing erotica expands, like it really, and I, poor Rachel, I haven't let her talk yet. She's sitting here looking at me, but before we get started, I could have done this before I said how to write erotica, because you may have kids in the car going, Mommy, what's erotica? Daddy, erotica, can I ask my teacher about that? So this will be, in terms of language, probably our usual clean Apple lets us be a family-friendly podcast, but topic matter, you know, subject matter-wise, if you want to turn it off because you're just feeling like having this conversation with your kids, which you always should, at a different moment, we get it. Now's your chance. All right. So, Rachel, thanks for listening to all that. Give us your basic bio. I would rather you do it. I'm sure I should have warned you. So if you need to, like, grab yourself.
No, that's good. I can do that. I have been in the erotica field for over 20 years. I got started. I was in law school at NYU in the late 90s. Law school was not really working out for me. And I was reading a lot of erotica, and I'd never written fiction before. I'd written lots of nonfiction, or as much as someone who's 22 can have written a lot. And I thought, I'm going to try this. And there was a book whose name I'm not going to say, because I want to keep your show family friendly, but it started with star and it ended with C-K-E-R. And there were two letters in between. And it was a book of celebrity erotica stories, fictional. And it was based on a zine. And I wrote a short story about Monica Lewinsky, because this was 1999. And it was my first fictional story and my first erotica story. And it got published, and that was very exciting. And then it also got picked up. There's a lot of annual series in the erotica world. So it got picked up for Best Lesbian Erotica 2001. And that was so gratifying. I remember going to the Barnes & Noble that used to be in Chelsea.
I lived
in New
right
York,
next to that.
That
Barnes
no longer
Noble.
Exists.
Was it the one, which side of, was it the one on 6th Avenue or the one on 7th Avenue?
6th Avenue.
There used to be one on 7th
Avenue.
Oh,
I didn't even know about 7th Avenue. The one at 6th And this was before I got my author copies in the mail. It had gotten on the shelves. And I just remember standing there. And I mean, I think I cried because it was so exciting to have found erotica, which I found in college in Berkeley, California, at a bunch of indie feminist bookstores. And I started buying these anthologies. And then to be in one was just really thrilling. And that was just so exciting that I thought, I'm going to try it again. And at the time, like I said, I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I was really just doing it kind of on a lark and to see if I could, and because it was fun. And at the time, I was exploring my own sexuality. So it kind of coincided with that. I never studied erotica in school or even fiction. I didn't think of myself as a fiction writer. But, and this, I think, applies beyond erotica, like that first validation of being published in a book that with authors I admired, and to have people reading it that I didn't know from all over, that was just so exciting. And that probably more than anything pushed me to keep trying it. And so from there, I wrote a bunch more short stories here and there for different anthologies I heard about. And then a couple years later, I got asked to co-edit an anthology of erotica. And then from there, I got asked to do some more. And then it kind of switched to me pitching ideas to various publishers. And even though by now in 2023, I've edited over 70 anthologies and I've worked with almost 800 authors whose work is in those anthologies, it still really feels like I never planned to be writing a book called How to Write Erotica. I never set out to do that. It just kind of evolved. So I also teach erotica writing classes in person and now mostly online. And that also evolved because people were curious about it. And I think what you said is really interesting. You know, I think for a lot of people, even now, 2023, it's sort of exotic and a little scary and taboo. And I ran a reading series in New York for 5 years, and there were still a lot of people who they wouldn't RSVP to my reading series on Facebook because their neighbors would see it, or they, even authors who were in my books, you know, they were afraid to be publicly linked to it because there could be repercussions. And, you know, I don't fault them for that. I think that's just the nature of how our society treats sexuality. So I think there's a lot of curiosity and then questions people have both about the physical act of writing it and how to make it sensual, but then also the business side of how do I publish under a pseudonym and how do I make sure that pseudonym will never cross paths with my real name, because there could be real world consequences to that.
And you covered both of those things in How to Write Erotica. I was really focused on the how to write piece, but yeah, you get really deep into the reasons why you might not want your name associated publicly with the kind of erotica you write or with any erotica, and how to cope with that, which I think is great.
And I actually think for many people, those two are connected. I think for a lot of people, they can't tap into that fully free creative side of erotic writing until a part of their mind is settled on the fact that this is, you know, this will only be seen by people I want to see it, or no one has to know. And I mean, that might be their partner too, or kids or other family members. I think that can be a really big inhibiting factor. And I don't have exact numbers, but out of those, I think it's around 775 authors I've worked with, I would say probably 80% or more use pseudonyms. Most of the erotica writers I've worked with and read use pseudonyms. Now, some, they write in other genres, so they want to keep them separate. But I think for a lot of people, it's a practical thing and also just a comfort thing. Like, it helps them with the actual act of writing. And I think that makes sense, you know, because if you use your real name, I mean, I know that because I do, your family members might see it at the bookstore and pick it up. And that can be awkward. Like, I'm not sitting there writing my erotica thinking, what is, you know, my mom going to think of this, because it's just not, it doesn't help me be a good writer. It does the reverse.
Well, what I love about this is that I think that is true. I mean, it's almost like erotica takes the things that are true of every kind of writing and just amps them. Like you've just taken them to like the nth degree. Because a lot of memoirists and novelists, both, and even some forms of nonfiction writers have to get past that, but my such and such is going to read this, in order to write something true and honest. And somebody, some famous writer who I've, possibly every famous writer has said, you know, that no one ever writes anything true until their parents are dead. Because it's hard. And so I love that if you can think about that in the context of either writing just plain sex scenes or writing erotica, which can we stop and sort of define,
sure,
you know, what's erotica, the difference between erotica and steamy romance?
So it's a tough question. Sometimes people ask me that, and sometimes people ask me what's the difference between erotica and porn. I think all of those definitions, to some degree, many of them are in the eye of the beholder. Now, mm-hmm, romance and steamy romance, there are a lot more kind of rigid things that you need for that. I mean, in romance, you're going to have a happily ever after, and the main focus of the story is going to be on that relationship between the two or more main characters. And in erotica, you might also have that. There's a lot of stories I've published in my anthologies that could just as easily be called erotic romance, but they're also erotic to me, and I thought that they would appeal to erotica readers. So it's not that you can't have a romance in an erotica, but in an erotica story or novel, the characters don't have to end up together. And the main focus is on the sexuality and the sensuality and being turned on.
So
and what
you probably have genres of erotica.
Yes. And a lot of those have to do with the topic. Like there's paranormal erotica, there's dinosaur erotica, alien erotica is popular. There's cheating erotica. There's, you know, and that's a whole subsection. And there's so much, especially in the self-published arenas. There's, if you have a turn on, you can probably find people writing erotica about it. And you might not find as many if the more niche the turn on fetish kink is, but there will be people writing about it, and there will likely be readers who want to read that. And some of those readers have very specific things that they're into and then things that they're not into. And they'll tell the writers, like, I only want to read about this. And so I think that's great, because it means that A, those readers can get what they're looking for. And if you are a writer who can cater to that, you know, you have a built-in audience. And, you know, I think it kind of depends, like, what you're doing, what you're writing erotica for. Like, is it just for money? Is it for creative fulfillment? And is it, like, do you only want to write the type of erotica that turns you on, or creatively or otherwise? Or do you want to be a generalist and write all kinds of erotica? And, I mean, my personal experiences with writing for mainly traditional publishers and short stories. And I've written gay male erotica, transgender erotica, lesbian erotica, straight erotica, group erotica. Like, I've written a lot of different things. And that partly was because I didn't want to get bored. And I also wanted to challenge myself. And some of the things that have challenged me are not necessarily the things you would expect. I have a story in a book called Take Me There, edited by Tristan Taramino, and that's transgender and genderqueer erotica. And we did a reading for it, and my story is called Punching Bag, and it's about a trans man and in a boxing ring. And I said, you know, this was hard for me because I don't know anything about boxing. And that really was the thing that was harder for me than the trans element, even though I'm cisgender. You know, I felt like I could get in the head of that character and what turned them on. But the boxing, I had to do a little research. And I think that's something else. People sometimes think, oh, well, either I have to have done the things I'm writing about, or I have to feel personally attached to them, or you know, be turned on by them. And I don't think you have to. I think it can help. Like, if you are super into, let's say, bondage, and you know tons about it, I mean, use that in your erotica, because I think it will come across as authentic. But there is a wealth of information online, and it doesn't mean you have to be watching explicit porn videos, you can, but you can also look up, you know, chat rooms and social networking sites like FetLife, which is a kinky social networking site. Like, you can, without being a vulture about people's lives, you can find out what real people are doing in these areas and then fictionalize.
Well, and kind of the whole point of this is that it is something that you or someone else can imagine, and imagines is exciting. So it doesn't have to be real. Apologize right. to all of those who have actually had kinky sexual experience with aliens and vampires. But, you know, it doesn't have to be. If you haven't, that does not stop you from, right. you know, and sort of, there's a fantasy, like, there's not just a fantasy element to this. Fantasy is the point, or yes. one of the points.
Yes. And I mean, I think there's sort of two sides of that. And I don't want to belabor this topic because it can be divisive, but 50 Shades of Grey, E.L. James got called out by a lot of people from within the BDSM community for not being realistic within mm-hmm. that fictional world. So I think there is a line yeah. where you want it to seem like it could happen, but it can also be heightened and be elaborate and wild and something you can, it can also be something that literally could not happen because, you know, it's about vampires or unicorns or aliens or whatever. So I think there's a way to weave in realistic elements to make it not take people out of the story. So if you're doing bondage, you wouldn't necessarily want to have a character tied up overnight, because then people are thinking, well, what if something happens to them and no right. one's coming to get them? But, you know, maybe that person could think that they're being left alone overnight, but really the person's outside the door listening.
Right. Right. I'm also intrigued, and this is also a point I don't want to belabor, but, you know, when you're writing in the realm of erotic fantasy, it seems like that's a little less limiting in terms of writing about personal experience. You don't necessarily have to be
no,
the
not
thing
at all.
That you are
not at all.
Writing and to write it well. I mean, I would say that maybe the caveat there is don't pretend that you are.
I agree right? with that. I also think sometimes it works in reverse, where people have done the thing and they think that because they've done it, they can instantly...
They speak for all trans people.
Not that.
Or they don't want to, but...
Not yeah. even that, but that they're a great erotica writer because they've done it. And that's like saying, well, just because you had this wild experience, you could write a memoir about it. I mean, that's not necessarily true. You still have
yeah.
to...
Not everyone who hikes the Trans-Pacific Trail is going to write wild.
Right. So I... And I think this kind of goes back to what my philosophy is, and I may have missed answering your question, my definition of erotica is writing intended to arouse. And mm-hmm. I like that because it's very broad. And I've written erotica stories where there's no sex, or there's nothing that we would think of as sex, but there's something that turns the characters on. And one of the first stories I wrote was called Lap Dance Lust. And it's about a woman getting a lap dance. And it was about the buildup of that lap dance and how that was arousing for this character. And I think that feeling is what many people are reading erotica for. Now, mm-hmm. I think if you were building an erotic novel or a whole anthology of short stories where there was no sex, people would feel shortchanged. But I think sparingly, or, you know, within a sex scene, you can work on that tension. And that, you know, especially for readers who are reading lots of erotica, I think they remember the scenarios and the characters and the feelings more than necessarily the physical
act. Yeah.
Acts. Like you still want the physical act. You don't want to just fade to black, but to bolster them, you want to know about why that turns on these characters. And one thing I tell my students is, you know, let's say you're writing a story about spanking. I mean, there could be 10 groups of two people each, so 20 people, and they're all doing the same physical act of spanking. So if someone was watching, they would see the same thing. But every one of those 20 people is feeling something different, like the people getting spanked and giving the spanking. And so there's so many reasons they each of them might be doing it. And that gives you freedom.
And I want to just stop and I want to stop and zoom in on that, because that was what I loved about your book so much is you listeners, even if you're not intending to write erotica, this is a fantastic book because it's very much about exactly what Rachel just said, which is you could have 20 people spanking, or heck, you can have 20 people buying coffee. You know, you can have 20 people solving a murder mystery. You can have 20 people, taking a plane ride across the country to see their parents, but they're all doing it for a different reason. They're experiencing different internal emotions around it. They're experiencing different elements of the physicality of doing the act. And that's what's really wonderful about this book, is that while it is focused on this one area, the lessons to me were really broadly applicable in terms of thinking much, you know, not just going, I'm going to write a story about two people who have sex that involves spanking. That's not enough, right?
And sometimes nothing. I think people...
It's like saying, I'm going to write a murder mystery and thinking, you're okay, I'm ready. Turn it over to page one.
And I think sometimes people... have really great plot ideas, like the setting is somewhere intriguing, and because I read a lot of short stories for my anthologies, I'll read 100 to 200 to select 20 to 25, and I'll think, oh, this is going to go somewhere, and I'm going to want to publish this, and it sort of fizzles out during the sex scene, and sometimes I think that is because they've built up this really elaborate, fascinating world, and then either they run out of space or I don't know what it is, but they don't bring that same level of world building into the sex. And so the sex just doesn't feel as rich and full as it could. And I care about these characters. Like, I want to know what turns them on. And probably the biggest edit note I give is, can I hear more about why, what they're feeling in this moment, not just what they're doing, but what they're feeling.
Why do they like that thing?
Emotionally,
why do they want that thing?
And physically, but I think for me as a reader and as an editor, you know, I want to know, you know, is it something that, you know, they've had this fetish their whole life and they're finally fulfilling it? Or is it that, you know, they have a different partner every week. And if that's the case, like, what about this one partner is so exciting? Like, why are you writing the story? Why should readers care? Like, how can we get into the
why are you writing the story? Why should readers care?
I mean, that sounds mean, but
but that's the core of every podcast that we do about writing fiction or writing memoir, and really nonfiction too. If you don't have a why, and if there's not a reason for people to care, the juiciest, steamiest scene, the bloodiest, most violent murder, the, you know, coolest, most fascinating alien spaceship, it's just not going to cut it.
And I think, especially for my job as an anthology editor, sometimes I think people will say, well, what are you missing or what do you need? And sometimes it is, and I know it when I see it, thing, because I want to surprise readers. I want them to read, they may not read through, you know, 20 stories in a row. They may jump around, but if they do read them all, I don't want them to be bored. Like, I want them to feel like, oh, that's different. You know, that story is about a love doll, and not a man with a love doll, but a woman with a male love doll. Or that story is about like a historical story that's happening in the 1800s and people were just as wild and sexually perverse as they are now. And, you know, I want to give them something to turn them on. I mean, that's my primary job, but also to think about, you know, or think about maybe like, you know, what are these aliens like? And, you know, why is it sexy to be with an alien or whatever it is? So I'm just always looking for new authors and new energy and just new ways of talking about eroticism. And, you know, sometimes I feel like people think they have to reinvent the wheel when it comes to erotica and writing about sex. And I don't necessarily think there's new sex positions. I mean, there may be some new sex positions, but you can still imbue it with something that feels new and feels fresh and exciting. And I think that doesn't mean that it has to be sex on Mars. Like, I always say it could be sex with two people who've been married for 50 years with the lights out under the covers. And I still want to know about that if there's something passionate happening between them.
Right. So let's just stop and take a step back and talk about the actual finding your way to writing this. And I really want to approach it from the angle of, for most people, this is not the most comfortable topic. You know, the reason I suggested at the beginning of this, so you might want to turn it off if you have your kids or teenagers in the car, is because lots of us need a minute to get ready to talk about that stuff with our kids or our teens or our parents, or even our partners. So, what are some of the ways that you as a teacher and as a writer of a instructional book encourage people to get past their own hesitations about writing about this uncomfortable topic?
I mean, one way I feel like is A, making sure, you know, you have privacy. Something that if just the act of getting started feels uncomfortable, I've written under pseudonyms, and I think that can be a really, it sounds simple, like you know who you are, but making an alter ego and putting that name at the top of your page can help sort of transport you into this other mental state where, you know, you're not you, you're mm-hmm. that person. And that can unlock something. And, you know, I think you can also get inspiration from a photo or from, you know, there's a lot of prompts in my book, but I've written stories based on a phrase. I wrote a story called Necessary Roughness, which I believe it's a football term, but I don't watch football, so I don't really know. But I think it was also a TV show. And I just thought, I love that phrase. I'm going to write a story based on that phrase. And I didn't know exactly what it was going to be, but I wanted to do that. And I think once you start thinking about erotica as something, not just that, you know, you can only write in this one mindset, but that is happening or could be fodder all around you, whether it's, you know, someone's coming to repair your refrigerator or you're going out to dinner or even you're stuck in traffic. And, you know, maybe you're like checking out the people next to you. I love taking a scenario that in real life is annoying and frustrating and bad and transforming it into something erotic in the fictional realm, because to me, that's what's fun about fiction in general. You're not beholden to real life. And I also write nonfiction and essays, and I've written about my sex life. And there you do have facts that you have to stick to. And in erotica, you're free to say whatever you want because it's fiction. And I love that. And I definitely encourage people, especially if they're writing something based on their real life, to sort of forget that for a minute and don't feel like, well, it really happened like this, so I have to narrate it down to the letter exactly the way it happened, because there might be something juicier that didn't happen, that maybe you wanted to happen, or, you know, maybe something's 80% true, but 20% is made up, and no one has to know except you what that 20% is.
And do you think that people who are going to successfully write erotica or put successful sex scenes in their fiction or their memoirs, because there are definitely sex scenes in my memoir, are they all people who are totally relaxed around this topic?
No, I mean, you know, and I think you can also incorporate that uncomfortableness, which is a very common feeling, into your erotica. Like, your characters don't all have to be, you know, taking their clothes off the first mm-hmm. second they walk into the sex party. They don't even have to go to a sex party. They might be a virgin. They might be shy. They might be nervous. And, you know, maybe there's two nervous characters, and how do they negotiate sex? And then how do they get past that? There's a novel I really like called Addition by Toni Jordan, T-O-N-I Jordan. And it's about a woman with OCD, and it's not an erotic novel, but it is about her being pretty much, you know, trapped in her routines and slowly being introduced to the wider world through a relationship. And there are sex scenes in there and a sexual storyline. And I thought that was just so interesting because, you know, she couldn't have all her OCD routines while she's fully exploring her sexuality. And it was woven into the novel, but and that reminds me that I've published a short story about a woman with agoraphobia who similarly, a partner helps her start to leave the house. And, you know, again, this probably doesn't sound like, oh, I want to sit down and read mental health erotica, but I do think that erotica can be a way of looking at real life issues that are serious and are not fun, but that our sex life doesn't only happen, or we're not only sexual beings when everything is going amazingly. You know, maybe you lost your job, or you're going through a divorce, or you have a death in the family, and like sex and sexuality can still crop up the way, you know, grass grows through the cracks in the sidewalk. And as a reader, I'm also interested in those kind of emotionally rich stories. And I think those can be very powerful and memorable for readers who maybe are going through something similar, or just, you know, I think, yes, some people are reading erotica. Most people are reading erotica to get off and to be entertained and for lighthearted fare, like as a alternative to the darker elements of the world. But you can also incorporate real, you know, as opposed to what we were talking about before with, you know, unicorns and vampires.
Right. Well, if you want, other books have erotic elements. So, you know, I've touted this book a lot because I love it. But Catherine Newman's "We All Want Impossible Things" is, you know, I've joked that it's the funniest story about the end of life that I've ever read, and it definitely has erotic moments. But it's, you know, a beautiful piece of amazing fiction that it's certainly not about only be a sexual being when everything is going great. And you know, I think there's sort of two sides of this coin. And the first is that you have erotica that is also incorporates these serious elements, but you can also have books that wouldn't be shelved as erotica, but they have erotic elements, which I think is, you know, it's a part of life, right? And a lot of us really want to know how to do that.
It can be really fun to discover those, I think, in other kinds of fiction. I'm going to shout out one more book, and I don't remember how to say the author's name. It's one of my favorite books, A Concise Chinese English Dictionary for Lovers by Xiaolugo. And I just discovered it in a bookstore in London a while ago. I think one of the big fiction prizes, but it's about a woman who comes from China, rural China, to England, and is learning English throughout the course of the book. And there's a scene where she's at, I believe, a strip club or a sex show. And she uses language that in another context from a Native American speaker would sound hokey, like flower and these words for body parts. But in the context of the book, it's very erotic and very fascinating, because similar to the protagonist of Edition, sex is a part of her learning this whole new culture and opening herself up to new experiences. And I think, yes, you can definitely incorporate erotic elements that don't have to be quote unquote erotica into other kinds of stories. And it's funny because I wish I had some quick and easy answer to people who want to write erotica, but, you know, don't know how to get started. I think sometimes you just have to, and this probably applies to any writing, like you just have to jump in and, you know, maybe, I mean, like if you are curious about it, you probably have some glimmer of something you want to write about. And, you know, maybe it's the thing that you keep avoiding that you just start with the sex scene. You don't have to know your character's entire backstory or everything about them. I mean, you can just start with whatever element of a scene you want to, and then you can work backwards or forwards.
Do you have a good, we're going to run out of time. So I want to make sure we tackle this premier issue of this, which is, how do you, if you write a good erotic scene into either a book of erotica or into any book?
I think it goes back to sort of that empathy and thinking about your character and who they are and what, like, why are they turned on by this thing? And sometimes people default to, well, okay, their partner is someone who looks like, let's say, Brad Pitt. So of course, readers are going to understand why that's sexy. And you still have to say it. Like, you still have to tell us not just that this character looks like Brad Pitt, but that why that is such a turn on to your character. You know, is that their type? Is that someone, is that not their normal type? Is that, you know, how did they meet, and what about that person is compelling them to do whatever they're doing with them? And, you know, is this something they've tried before? Is it something totally new? And there's no right or wrong answer. Like, everyone's going to approach these things differently. And like, one of the prompts in the book, something I start a lot of my classes with, is write an erotica story involving food. I love this one because you can just do it endlessly. And I'm kind of a foodie person. And I once wrote a story based on something my friend told me about seeing a woman eat French fries in Paris off a plate with a burner underneath. And she was using a fork. And the way she described it was just so sensual. So I basically lifted that and wrote about a woman who spies another woman eating like that and goes in, and they may become friends, and they're kind of flirting over these French fries. And I think there's so many sensual elements of food, and that can involve cooking for someone or feeding them something or eating with them, or maybe you're, you know, sneaking food in a movie theater. There's just a lot of fun elements.
As you're talking about this, I'm hearing some of the other things that you include so well in How to Write Erotica, which is all the different things that play into this scene. So what does it look like? What does it look like to the view, you know, to the protagonist, to the person in the story? What are they seeing? What are they remembering as they
see it? What does it smell like? What does it feel like? You know, and there's like chocolate body rubs. I mean, there's just so many things. And I like food because it is something we all encounter every day. So that's not to say that, you know, you have to be writing about your morning smoothie or whatever it is you're eating. But, and I can't remember, I had to cut a lot of the quotes from erotica that I had for space, but there's a story called Cheesy Boots by L. Elise Bland in a book I edited called Dirty Girls. And it's about a woman who makes a man eat this stinky cheese off her boots. Mm-hmm. And she is a cheese expert. So she got really into, like, it's like some cheese that I think is illegal here. And like this fancy, maybe unpasteurized, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like very detailed. And he didn't want to do it. He's like, I want a hamburger. And she's like, it's not about what you want, it's about what I want. And so it was just this back and forth about the cheese. And it was just such an interesting approach to food, because it wasn't oysters or whipped cream or something we'd normally think of. And I feel like, you know, you could write about those. You could also, you know, if you can write about Brussels sprouts and make them sexy, more power to you. And I bet you, as much as we might be laughing, there's probably someone who's like, yeah, I find Brussels sprouts sexy. And that actually ties into why I'm still doing this all these years later. There's always someone with a new perspective on sex and erotica and what is sexy and arousing. And I think that's because we're all different. I mean, yes, there's a lot of overlap in people and what turns them on, but each of us is a unique person and each character is unique. And so there's just always new ideas. And I think that's something to remember. If you feel like, well, I have nothing to say, I bet if you sit with it and you keep trying, you may have something to say. And you also may write something that is not what you thought you would write. You might write something that is about something that doesn't turn you on, that actually kind of turns you off, but within the context of this fictional world is sexy to you as an author.
I love that. And I have loved this. And I really, I learned a lot from How to Write Erotica, and I am totally going to go back to it, both as I write erotic scenes within the things that I write. And I have incidentally noticed that I kind of just write the same erotic scene over and over again. So if you read my fiction, you will be like, hey, this is kind of the third time this has been very similar to this. So yeah, I got that to go with. But as I write other sensual scenes, and there are a lot of different forms of sensuality that go into writing fiction, I'm going to be looking back to this to think about the things that are important as I tell the story. So I want to say I really loved it, and everyone should go out and grab it. And let's just pause for a minute, and then let's talk about what we've been reading in this context or any other context. Hey, listeners. Is 2023 going to be the year you finally click through and start exploring the idea of becoming a book coach? If you've been intrigued by all the conversations we've had about book coaching over the years here at Hashtag MWriting, maybe this is your year to make it happen. Author Accelerator's Book Coach Certification Program teaches you the key editorial, project management, client intaking, and emotional skills necessary to launch your own book coaching business. I've done their program, and even after years as an editor for the New York Times, I expanded my skills dramatically, and my approach to helping others with their books and to writing my own is so much better. The best part? No publishing experience is necessary to be good at this work. Are you curious to see if you have what it takes? Head to bookcoaches.com/podcasts now to take Author Accelerator's free quiz to find out if you have the skills and characteristics needed to launch your own book coaching business today. All right, I always like to let the guests go first. So, Rachel, what's something that you have enjoyed reading lately?
I am reading a really fun novel, City of Likes by Jenny Mollen.
And I've read that. We can talk about it.
It is not an erotic novel, and I am not finished, but I will say there's a little bit of a thread of like this flirtation happening, but I just think it's such a fun send up of mom culture and influencer culture. And I think if you spent any time on Instagram, if you're on Instagram, you're going to see at least a little bit of yourself. It's almost impossible to not sometimes feel sucked into the like, what does she have that I don't have? And like, I want to be like this person. And even though Mollen makes it really over the top and you're kind of laughing along with some of the things that are happening, there are moments where I'm like, yep, I've felt that exact same way looking at someone's feed. So I'm just really enjoying it. And I'm also kind of like trying to figure Daphne out and if she's flirting or not. Like it's not an erotic novel, but it goes back to what you were saying. There's still sensuality in all kinds of fiction. And there is this like kind of weird flirty thread that I'm enjoying.
There's undertones of that. And one of the things that book does so well is kind of exactly what we've been talking about. I mean, you know, you can say, well, I saw it on Instagram and the person looked beautiful and the picture was beautiful and therefore I wanted it, but it's never that simple. You know, that particular thing on Instagram struck me, whereas the 16,000 things I'd already scrolled through didn't, because that reminded me of some, you know, person in junior high school or something that I was never allowed to have or whatever. You know, it's all about the protagonist and how they respond to the things that they see. It's not just, it doesn't just assume that just because it's cool and beautiful and on Instagram, it will light people up. So I enjoyed that one too. That's fun.
So it's been a fun, I read certain things in print and then that I'm reading on my Kindle, and I'm kind of weird and I walk around my neighborhood and I carry my book and I also read it on the treadmill. And for that, I really need something light and fun because it keeps me going faster.
I agree. Well, I just want to shout out something that I read a while ago, but she has a new book. And part of the reason I'm doing it is because it kind of fits into this podcast so well. So I'm a real fan of Olivia Dade, and one of her books is called Spoiler Alert, and she has something new called, I think, Shipwrecked. It's definitely got ship.
I think it's Shipwrecked.
Yeah, and I have it. I haven't read it yet, so I'm not telling you. I don't know, but based on her first two books, I'm going to bet it's great. But the reason I'm shouting it out is because Olivia Dade writes in a universe that she's invented it's our world, but there's a TV show that's basically Game of Thrones, and she writes about characters that are actors on this, but the fact that fanfic, and in particular erotic fanfic, exists is so important to these books, and it was kind of an introduction for me to the idea. I probably knew there was erotic fanfic out there, but hadn't really given it a whole lot of thought. And the ways that the people interact within the erotic fanfic site, and then in the real world, and then in their TV set, it's fascinating. So it's a great It's a great kind of erotic adjacent.
I like that. I also read a lot of romance, and there, unlike, I feel like when I was reading Danielle Steele and Judith Krantz when I was a teenager, which they had like over the top sex, but romance novels now have gotten a lot more explicit and racy. And there's, you know, I think for the better. I mean, I think it's, there's a lot of very steamy things happening in romance.
Well, they're really much more concerned with, let's come out right back to it. I'm just going to bang this home. Why it matters to the person. I feel like the ones that I read as a teenager too were just more about, ooh, look, it's a sex scene. And, you know, people are having sex and this is how they do it. And hey, when you're a teenager, you're like, whoa, okay, cool. Give me more details on the specifics of this, because I grew up before, you know, the advent of porn, and I needed you to describe that to me so I would know what was going on. But now, I guess everybody probably knows the what you put where kind of possibilities, or at least the basic ones. And so we need to know why is that great for this person? And I think romance now is so much more concerned with that.
And I think if you are on Book Talk and you look at some of the sexy books that are popular there, I mean, the things that people are quoting a lot of times are dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, that doesn't require someone to be doing something. I mean, they might be also doing something, but I think for a lot of readers, it's the dialogue and the way it's said and what it's said and what it means and how it's interpreted that is sexy, that's memorable.
Yeah, it's the exchange and the understanding and what it all means. So, and that's true of everything. All right. Well, this was so great. Something I want, you mentioned that you teach erotica classes. I would love it if you told us where, so I could put a link to it in the show notes.
You can look on my site, rachelkramerbuffel.com. And I also teach and do consulting with authors at eroticawriting101.com.
Okay, perfect. And what social media platforms do you hang on, if any?
Twitter is still my favorite. Okay. I'm Raquelita, Raquelita, and I'm Rachel Kramer Bustle on Instagram.
So I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. I definitely did. We are, as you may have heard, doing a whole lot more with Substack, whole lot more trying to comment, trying to chat. When you ask me what social network I am most active on at the moment, it's going to be the comments of this podcast and the chat around this and my other email, because I'm trying to make my world a little smaller. So join us in the comments if you have any thoughts about this. If you want to say anything about this or any other episode, or suggest a topic, or throw yourself out there as a possibility for somebody who needs some writing help, you can email us/me at amwriting@substack.com. And if you're a subscriber to the podcast, replying to the weekly emails will always get us. And you should be a subscriber, because that's how you hear about other things that are going on. All right. That's it. I think I said all the things I'm going to say. I definitely vary them every week, primarily because I can't remember what they all are. And yeah. So, thanks for listening. And until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output, because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.